Hey there, this is Justin with Beyond the Uniform. My goal is to give active duty military personnel resources so that they can help navigate their career, learn from veterans who have gone before them and careers they've chosen, and see if that's something that would appeal to them as well. This week I'm talking to Bobby Farina, a very charismatic interview. It is a great talk for anyone who's interested in financial services, anyone who's interested in investment banking or private equity. Bobby does a really great job of breaking down the different parts of financial services and explaining it to a military audience. Bobby comes from the Air Force Academy. He served in the intel community within the Air Force. Got a master's degree from Johns Hopkins, got out and went to Columbia where he did his business school. I really like his explanation around how to evaluate the opportunity cost of investing in a graduate school degree, how to choose your program and find what's right for you. This week, I'm also doing this in addition by video, not just the audio version. So if you're more visually oriented, you can check out the video at beyondtheuniform.io. As always, show notes will show you the different points of time in the interview if you want to skip ahead. We do bounce around quite a bit in this interview, but if you want to jump ahead to a particular part, find the time online, you can do so. And here is Bobby Farina and his experience.
So thanks for meeting, and really excited to learn more about your path from the Air Force till now.
Perfect.
So I guess just to start off, would love to hear for context your background at the where you grew up, why you went to the Air Force Academy, that experience, and then what you did in the Air Force.
Sure. So Catholic school kid from the suburbs of Chicago.
Yep.
Went to Air Force. So spent 18 years of my life in Chicago, in the northern suburbs of Chicago. Mm. Went to Air Force Academy. I was a comm officer. First duty station.
How did you choose Air Force Academy? Or at what point did you know you wanted to go to the Air Force Academy?
Yeah, it's probably best told over a couple of beers, but went there for probably the wrong reasons. It's almost a dare or a challenge.
Yeah. But
certainly had awareness of the Air Force Academy because being a Catholic school kid from Chicago, everybody wants to go to South Bend to play football for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Who does Notre Dame play annually?
Yeah.
Naval Academy. And I think fairly more regularly back then, Air Force Academy.
Yep.
And so, again, probably best told over a couple of couple of Frosties, but probably went there for not the greatest of reasons, stayed for much better reasons, and certainly the rest is kind of history.
Yeah.
That's why I went to Air Force. So first duty station as a communications officer was in Wichita, Kansas at McConnell Air Force Base, not exactly the Florence of the Midwest, but learned a lot there. So I was a management major at Air Force, which for non-Air Force Academy grads, it really is kind of a mini MBA. So we don't have the amount of faculty or personnel to split out an accounting degree, an MIS degree, a finance degree, so on and so forth. So it really is kind of everything and everything that you'd study in an MBA. Really had an interest in business, but of course took all the engineering classes because they're free. Learned a lot on the job. I was doing more network security, so think kind of routers, firewalls, switches. Mm. And then I think due to some of the programs that I worked on there and kind of, I know in 2016 this seems kind of old hat now, but remote software delivery, particularly as it related to the Melissa and the I Love You virus, for those who remember that.
Wow.
It kind of caught the attention of this new field called information awareness or information assurance, now called generally cybersecurity. So kind of
this is back like 2004-ish?
2000 or 1999 and 2000.
Okay, wow.
So it was just beginning
to
gain
some steam. Oh, man, that was the heyday of it.
So attracted some of the attention of the intelligence community when I was applying for jobs after when I was PCSing. I think you use that, that term, or PCA.
Permanent change of station.
Exactly. Yep. And so I really wanted to go to a big city. I had these skills that the intelligence community was looking to do more cyber stuff, cyber related stuff, and so found a perfect match. So headed to DC. My billet was at Defense Intelligence Agency, which is one of the big three letter ones. So you've got NSA, CIA, DIA, NRO. DIA actually owned the networks, which is called JWICS. So it's the intelligence network. And so you worked, you interfaced with all of the other intelligence community entities. because you own the network. So I ended up doing computer security there.
Did that feel like a risk at the time? I'm just wondering, I'm trying to think back in that time if it was, because it was so new, I'm wondering like how built out was it? And was it kind of a leap of faith in terms of, is this good for my career? And I'm just curious what that was like.
So I would say that thinking ahead, I saw that things were evolving. And in fact, you know, as kind of a business-minded person, mm-hmm. I saw that the way to unlock e-commerce, and again, this is 2016, but think put yourself in the shoes of somebody in 1999 or 2000. Do I feel comfortable putting my credentials on the internet? Mm. Amazon.com really didn't exist, I think, too much at that point, but yep. Do I feel comfortable with my social security number, my address, my birth date, my credit card details? And if not, what would unlock this? Yep. And it's information security or cybersecurity. And so as kind of a business-minded person, maybe I'm kind of patting myself on the back, but I did think that there were applications beyond the military that information security and cybersecurity certainly held. Yeah. And so I thought, regardless of whether this is a good move internal to the military, and again, I hadn't chosen at that point that I was, you know, it was a definite or foregone conclusion that I was getting out at 5 years. But I certainly thought, as when I began Air Force Academy, that you know, our mission was to develop air leaders with vision for tomorrow. By the time I graduated, it was develop and inspire air and space leaders with vision for tomorrow. Oh, wow. Because of the element of satellites. Now, funny enough, fast forward, you know, only a handful of years, how war has evolved so quickly that the mission at Air Force Academy now is develop and inspire air, space, and cyber leaders with vision for tomorrow. So while I did think that it certainly had practical applications in the commercial world, I thought that kind of thinking that the intelligence community was kind of the elite of the DOD and the IC and how they intersect, you know, if these guys were valuing cybersecurity, it had to be something that, you know, I don't know if it was irreversible, but it was certainly a trend and a trend that you needed to get your head around. So I did, and you know, being, again, going back to being a kid from the burbs of Chicago, you know, Wichita, Kansas, listen, you as a Navy guy, they put really nice Navy bases in really nice areas.
Yeah.
Air Force, not so much. So I wanted to get back to a city. And so maybe that's probably not the best way to select an assignment, but it's certainly a way.
It's funny, the number one location for Navy, Air Force, and Army veterans is D.C. Like, everyone ends up in D.C. It's the number one city for once people transition out, so it's a good area.
Yet at the time, nobody wants to go there. When I told my commander, who is writing my recommendations for the intelligence community, she said, "You want to go to D.C.? Nobody wants to go to D.C.
Yeah.
But yes, I did.
Yeah. And at what point did you decide, like, hey, I'm going to transition? Like, when did you know you wanted to get out of the Air Force?
So I am one of the people who was pilot qualified, largely meaning that I was medically qualified to go to UPT, undergraduate pilot training. I didn't end up doing that, and for a couple of reasons. You know, probably the largest reason by far was, you know, many of my friends who are now educators or doctors or pilots have known that they wanted to do it since they were this tall.
Yeah.
And so as we were talking before the interview here, I feel as though it's much more of a calling than just a job. It's not as though, hey, you know, if that, you know, corporate gig at Boeing doesn't work out, you know, maybe I'll jump in the cockpit and become a pilot. Like, it's really not the way things work. Like, these people want to be in the cockpit at all costs. And when they're not in the cockpit, they're not happy. Mm-hmm. I did have the fortunate ability to fly in fighter planes and logged 5 or 7 hours total in F-15s and F-16s. It was cool. It was fun. But it was nothing that if I wasn't doing it, it would, you know, I wouldn't feel fulfilled.
It didn't seem like that calling, yeah.
Yeah, and so at the time, if you went to UPT, you know, you're kind of signing up for a minimum of 12 years. I don't think that that's consistent now. Oh. I think it's 7 years or so, and depending on pilot retention, I think they dial that up or dial that down. So as a 22-year-old kid, having that option, you know, again, not a foregone conclusion, but the option of getting out at 5 versus 12 was more appealing. But largely kind of the driver there was like, it didn't really light my hair on fire. I wasn't passionate about flying. And so, you know, I don't know when it's interesting when I think back about my career. My only operational component was at McConnell. Then I went to the intelligence community, and there's, you know, a small subset. The military is really not well represented there. Yeah. There's a lot of contractors, a lot of DOD civilians, and a small element of military people there. So I kind of lost touch of the, you know, wearing the uniform, saluting. And so, you know, you gradually transition to where, you know, I was almost a consultant. I mean, I traveled 3 out of 4 weeks a month. And so, you know, it becomes easier to separate yourself at that point when your 5 years is up.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, my boss had said, listen, I'd love for you to take off the uniform and put on a suit, and we'll say goodbye to you on Friday and say hello to you on Monday.
Wow.
Just in a different, you know, we're wearing a different hat of sorts. But kind of the promise to myself was if we'll talk about business school here. If I got into a world-class business school, I was likely going to go try my hand at Wall Street.
Yep.
And that again kind of boils back to being a management major at Air Force.
Yeah, yeah. What about when you got out, did you do the reserves? And how did you evaluate that decision, or any advice on making that decision?
It's so incredibly frustrating because I didn't have, again, small military component in the intelligence community. And so nobody told me, do this, don't do that. And so it was a clean break. I got out of the military completely, didn't even entertain the thought of the reserves because nobody presented a cogent argument on what the reserves is, why you should do it. And funny enough, you know, as I moved to New York and went to business school, I became actively involved in recruiting for Air Force Academy as a what are they called?
We call them blue and gold for the Navy, so I'm wondering if it's...
I'll think of this in a second, but it's effectively being an interviewer for Air Force Academy admissions, and everybody else was doing it as a reserve job. It's ALO, Admissions Liaison Officer.
Okay.
I was doing it at purely donating my time. So I clearly had you know, the intent and the desire to continue to help out and not only support the Air Force, but also the Air Force Academy more specifically. I was doing it, you know, purely on a donating my time basis, and people thought I was absolutely crazy. I had no idea that this position existed.
Yeah, I could be getting credit for all this that I'm doing anyways.
Medical benefits. I mean, you know, I would like, you know, the nice, you know, coffee change that you'd get when you retired, but more so it's, you know, remaining involved, having a touch point. You know, being part of a larger team.
Oh yeah.
You know, we talked that we'll likely settle in Utah.
Yeah.
Hill Air Force Base and medical benefits would have been right nearby.
Oh yeah.
I don't have any of that now. And so it's a big regret.
If I mean, we'll get to your post business school jobs in a little bit, but I'm curious what your impression is in financial services or the companies you've worked at of how they would have accommodated reserves in terms of those 2 weeks a year or having that one weekend a month commitment, if that would have posed a significant problem or if you think it would have been easy enough to wiggle that in.
Interesting question, and I would say they probably wouldn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and we'll talk about investment banking and what mergers and acquisitions mean and the time commitments, but you know, I went to business school, started in 04, graduated in 06, so there's still, you know, and went to business school in New York and stayed in New York. And so, you know, the wounds were still somewhat fresh from 2001, from September 11th. And so there probably would have been a bit of, you know, empathy there for, hey, go do what you need to do. I would say, though, that work just means that it's piling up.
Yeah.
And we'll talk again about kind of time commitments, but I think that their view would have been, well, you know, just get
the
done.
Work done. Yeah.
that's great.
Which introduces its own complexity.
Yeah, exactly.
What about for grad school? So you did your MS in information security while in the Air Force. And I'm wondering, for those who are considering doing grad school while still on active duty, any advice you have or thoughts, pros and cons on that?
Sure. So a couple of things. I would say that if you are entertaining staying in the military, I know that it's I don't even think it's an unwritten requirement. I think it's a written requirement that in order to be promoted to O4, possibly O4, definitely O5, you need an advanced degree. I would say that if there is a, you know, particularly as you know, the ops tempo continues to persist, you're getting transferred every 2-3 years, and there's a viable entity on base, go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
I would say that if you're thinking about leaving the military, I would say, and not to be an education snob here, don't dilute the great start that you had. Now, I'm speaking as an academy graduate, I'm speaking now as an academy graduate, not necessarily as a general or generic Air Force officer. But you know, frankly, it's a great start. But Justin, as you know, going to Stanford GSB,
yeah.
nobody when you're thinking about getting out and getting a job, you know, everybody else who you went to school with at GSB is wildly talented and went to great undergraduate institutions, and so. You may have had maybe this was true, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 decades ago where, you know, all you needed was a BS, or a BA, on your application and you'd be eligible, for world-class jobs out there. Now, unfortunately it takes, an advanced degree and recruiters, are unfortunately, looking at kind of the top 25 or top 50 schools. So, saying that you went to Webster State, nothing against Webster State.
Yep.
Even if you did have a U.S. Military Academy or Naval Academy or Air Force Academy undergraduate, you're likely going to just be looked over. And frankly, that's not where the recruiters are recruiting. They're not recruiting at Webster State. They're recruiting from the top law schools, the top medical schools, the top business schools.
I got very similar advice, which was because I was considering doing like an online program while in the Navy, and an officer who was further ahead than me, who had gone to Harvard Business School, said the exact same thing, which was like, look, it depends on what you want, but for me, I know I want to go into this industry, and then to have a service academy, Harvard Business School, and then online University X, it just seems like it dilutes the branding. And again, it depends, I think, on what people want to do and what their ambitions are, but I think it's something to consider is kind of the level setting of branding on a resume.
Sure, I think that's absolutely right. More specifically, and I'll get back to speaking a bit about the academy, another reason why I did Johns Hopkins for this MS in information security was one, I was working for the time for NSA. They had designed this curriculum at Johns Hopkins, just given the proximity of the two institutions, Baltimore and Fort Meade, and it was highly encouraged, which we all know what that means. It means that you should have started it yesterday.
Yeah.
So it was just further advancement and further kind of credentializing yourself in this industry that's just beginning to really explode and blow up on cybersecurity. And so that was one reason. And then the other reason is, at this point, this is when I'm starting now to think about, let's have some optionality at the 5-year point. Not sure if I'm going to stay in or not sure if I'm going to get out. But I was pretty set on thinking that business school was going to be the path at which I transitioned to the civilian workforce. But I couldn't apply with my seemingly, which is to say, my deficient GPA.
Yep.
I graduated with a 2.7 GPA from Air Force Academy, which is funny enough the historical mean GPA of Air Force Academy, but. You know, not sure if any of these admissions councils at any of the top business schools would recognize that it's the historical mean GPA.
That it's not padded, that it's not inflated. Yeah,
that's exactly right. And chances are, I'm applying with somebody else who went to a military academy and had a 3.7 GPA.
Yeah,
and so there was a scramble to say I need to go do an advanced degree at a reputable institution. So I can demonstrate that I'm a capable, qualified, competent person because I didn't do so at Air Force Academy.
Yep.
And so, you know, I would say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yeah.
And it cost me $60,000 out of my pocket at Johns Hopkins in order to pay $140,000 to go to Columbia Business School.
Yeah.
Because I didn't do it. I was screwing around, you know, chasing girls and drinking beers in Denver rather than hitting the books.
It's good advice for people still in college. I was similar. I did electrical engineering. It kicked my ass. It was very difficult for me. And I think I had like a 3.2 or 3.3, which I struggled to get. And I think for Stanford, that's probably on the lower end that they take. But I took a couple, like a local college, I took a couple accounting courses and other things. One, just to get the exposure for business, but two, to show like, hey, I can perform and have something more recent that was a higher average. And who knows what role that played in admissions, but I think it was good.
So I ended up graduating with a higher than a 3.9.
Yeah.
I would say, hands down, Air Force Academy may have been the hardest educational experience that I had.
Yeah.
Which I don't think, you know, it takes a triple jump of the imagination to understand why. But listen, you know, if I had just done what I should have done at Air Force, I probably wouldn't have needed to go do that that advanced degree. Now, at the same time, it certainly helped in my job in the intelligence community. It helped me understand information security and cybersecurity much better. It was right there. Baltimore is right next to Fort Meade. So
yeah,
I'm glad that I did it. Yeah. I'm not sure that I needed to do it if I would have just done the right thing while in Colorado. But you live and you learn.
And how about having a master's degree from a top tier school, when you separated, I'm curious, how did you decide? I mean, it sounds like you were pretty focused on business, but how did you decide you wanted to pursue another master's degree, and how did you narrow it in on an MBA?
Sure. I think in a word, it was finance. You know, I was eligible to go do any number of jobs in and around the Beltway in cybersecurity. So SAIC, General Dynamics, Lockheed. You know, I could have gotten any number of jobs. You know, making at the time, this is 2004. You know, $120,000, $140,000, $160,000 for many of those prime contractors. Mm-hmm. And while I really liked what I was doing, back to that word passion. I wasn't terribly passionate about it. Mm. Even as we talked about kind of identifying trends of, you know, was this a good move for me doing something that was so new to the world, not only the military, but largely the world, cybersecurity, you know, what is this? And there's a bunch of computer dorks doing it. It was really with the thought of unlocking value from a commercial perspective. And so I really wanted to go do finance.
Okay. And how did you choose Columbia, and what was that application process like?
Sure. So it certainly wasn't as intense as Air Force Academy. You didn't need any endorsements from senators or congressmen or vice presidents, but it's involved. When you think about the people who you're applying against, they went to great undergraduate institutions. They had great kind of 2, 3, 4, 5 years of work experience. They had great standardized tests. And so, you know, you are no longer applying. You're kind of applying to the best of the best, if you will.
Yep.
Not to be taken lightly, I would say that there are certainly nuances amongst each program. I didn't even apply to Stanford, for example.
Well, I was going to say, having that knowledge that you wanted to go into finance, that definitely then tailors the type of school you want to apply to. So I'm wondering, what was the competitive set you were looking at? Because there are, I would say that Stanford isn't known for finance, but there are schools that are definitely known. So I'm curious which of those schools you'd recommend people look at.
Sure. So that's exactly what I meant by the programs are a bit nuanced. So I would say, you know, if you examine kind of the top 10 or top 15 business schools, which is where in order to have that return on the tremendous amount of money that you're not only explicitly paying, but also the opportunity cost of staying out of the workforce when I could have been making $140,000 or $160,000 a year with any of the prime contractors.
Yeah.
This is a real sacrifice. And so when you think about what schools you need to go to in order for career placement, trajectory, your lifetime earnings, it's you kind of need to fall squarely in a top 20 program for the numbers to make sense. Since I wanted to do finance, there are a handful of schools that do that really well. University of Chicago, Wharton at the University of Pennsylvania, Columbia Business School, Darden is pretty good at UVA. MIT's pretty good. And so, I was kind of largely focused on Wharton, Chicago, and Columbia. At the same time, I cast a wide net just because, the acceptance rates at these schools are, somewhere between 5% and 10%. So, at the end of the day, I wanted a top 15 MBA or a top 10 MBA. And so I would take whoever would take me,
yeah.
I would take.
Yeah.
Applied to a handful of them, got into most of them. And then
how many schools did you apply to? And if someone were thinking of applying to any of those schools or Columbia in particular, what advice would you have as an active duty person on that application process?
So go contact other military people who are in the program.
Yeah.
I think the great news is that even though people are incredibly busy, they're certainly willing to help and kind of on a pay it forward basis. In fact, I still read and review essays, do interview prep to this day. I've been out of business school now for 10 years. And people want to buy you dinner or buy you a 12 pack or buy you a bottle of booze. And my recommendation is pay it forward.
Yeah.
There's going to be someone asking the same dumb questions that I'm asking now, the same dumb questions or that I had asked,
yep.
the same dumb questions that you're asking of me now to you going forward. And so pay it forward. That's all I ask. Mm-hmm. So one is contact the existing military people there. And by the way, depending on program, there's definitely between 5 and 10% of the class that came from military backgrounds. There's an insatiable appetite, as you know, for leadership in these schools. So not only management, and we can talk about the difference, in fact, that's probably a different interview, the difference in philosophy between management and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a real craving, again, an insatiable appetite at these programs for people who have real leadership backgrounds, and they view the military as kind of an incubator for that. And so you're not applying against the ex-analyst banker or the ex-consultant. You are applying against your subset, your subset of your competitors, which are other military people. They value military candidates so much that at each one of these schools, there's a separate military club, so they're not hard to locate. And then in terms of just applying to schools and being relevant, and by the way, do not underestimate the value that your essays contribute, your qualitative remarks and your interviews contribute to your application package. Again, everybody's got the numbers. Everybody's got the great work experience. Everybody's got the great schools. The way to really differentiate yourself is through your essays and your interviews. So prepare. Start early and prepare. But know the programs. When you're applying to these, you cannot recycle wholesale essays from Harvard Business School to Stanford Business School to University of Chicago. They are different programs, and you need to slightly tweak and modify and shape your arguments and essays to reflect the difference in the programs.
Yep. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think that knowing the school, and I think that's where the reaching out to veterans at those schools or who are graduated, because they can give that flavor,
can
give that insight. And it's like dating, it's a two-way process, and it's like you're evaluating the school as much as they're evaluating you, and so the degree to which you can get to know the different flavors and see where you fit in. And it makes me think of back at the academy when evaluating the different communities and how for me submarines just clicked and it seemed like the right fit. I think that there's a similar parallel with business schools or grad school programs of seeing where you fit in and see where you relate the most.
I completely agree. I would say, and maybe it's because I didn't go to a Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, that there really isn't a perfect business school, but
yep.
There's a perfect business school for you.
Yeah.
I wanted to do finance. Again, I was targeting three schools, Chicago, Wharton, and Columbia. I really wanted to be in New York, which, Philly's not New York and
yeah.
Chicago's not New York. And so it was a perfect fit for me getting
yeah.
accepted at Columbia, which was my number one choice.
Yeah.
I turned down some other fantastic programs because I wanted to do finance in New York. And so, again, not a perfect business school. So, you can read all you want in Business Week or U.S. News and World Report about rankings. But at the end of the day, kind of throw them out. Go where you feel there's a real fit in terms of curriculum, in terms of culture, in terms of graduates, in terms of the industries that they likely funnel you into. you know, for example, you know, I would assume that most Stanford grads having a large entrepreneurial bent would never even contemplate going to Columbia, which largely funnels probably 80%, north of 80% of our graduates into banks or consulting firms.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's where you're ahead of most, because when I went to business school, I had very little clue what I'd do afterwards. I thought it would be probably consulting or something. And I think you had a leg up in knowing, I'm curious about that. I think you have a leg up knowing that you wanted to go into finance, because it saved you the time of going to a school that wouldn't have prepared you as well for that. And I'm curious, while you were in active duty, how did you know that you wanted to do finance?
You know, funny enough, maybe it's just kind of business mindedness of, you know, how I've always kind of liked money.
Yeah.
it was really kind of driven home when I moved to the East Coast from Wichita, from McConnell Air Force Base. I had no idea what Choate or Andover or Deerfield Academy. Everybody who in Chicago who wanted kind of a solid fundamental rooting of academics went to a Catholic school, which, you know, in other areas of the country, those were kind of like for the bad kids. There were reform schools.
Yeah.
In Chicagoland, going to a Catholic grade school and high school, you know, solid reading, writing, arithmetic, and typically good sports and good sense of community. By the time I got to the East Coast, I'd figured out that there are these fancy things called boarding schools that I honestly had never heard of.
Yeah.
And parents were paying $30,000-$40,000 a year to send their kids to boarding schools.
Yeah.
Had never heard of them. So, you know, I think there's a bit of a worldliness about being in an urban environment. Mm-hmm. And so getting to D.C. and meeting other people in the community and you know, I live downtown Washington. And so you meet some of these people and understand their experiences and where they have come from and what they want to do. It just kind of further kind of shapes and polishes and hones your thoughts and kind of you know, gives you real direction.
Yeah.
At that point kind of cemented, wow, it really is important to go to one of these schools if you want to do this afterward.
That's so great, because I was not as proactive as I could have been while in the military of just getting that exposure. And business school for me was great because it was the first time being exposed to all these different industries and getting the first taste of what I might like or dislike. And your ability to have made those connections while in D.C., you know, I think probably paid off in terms of early identification of where you wanted to go. And so for so from business school, you went to Bank of America. And I'm wondering, before we dive in, for like a military, someone on active duty right now, how would you explain financial services or investment banking in general? Like, what is the layout, the landscape, and how would you describe what that world is?
Sure. So financial services is very broad. There's everything from investment banking to sales and trading to PWM, private wealth management, to private equity and hedge funds. So that's broadly kind of the universe of financial services. You know, to kind of break each one of them up, investment banking is providing advice and capital to corporations. And we'll talk, that was my experience in M&A. Sales and trading is, this is the trading of, high yield debt. It's the trading of equities, are probably the two most common. And what you're doing largely is, if you're on the sales side, you are talking to large institutions, JP Morgan, State Street, Wellington, you know, down to, you know, public pensions, corporate pensions, endowments, foundations, to invest their money across an asset allocation. But kind of think market hours. You know, the markets are open 9:30 to 4:30 East Coast time. You know, a lot of, if you're on the sales side, kind of wining and dining. If you're on the trading side, you're executing trades from a portfolio manager. High net worth, PWM, private wealth management, you're talking to high net worth individuals and how to invest their personal capital. Again, kind of a lot of just a lot of shoe leather to go figure out who these people are who are selling their trucking companies in Monroe, Louisiana, and what they're now going to do with the $25 billion that they made from selling their trucking company to, you know, people who have gone in early, to use an example that's, you know, here in our backyard, you know, early members of high-flying tech companies that now have IPO'd and they have a tremendous amount of capital that they need to diversify away from the tech industry, going to seek these people out.
I always felt like the private wealth management people I met, they're like the king of the cocktail or the queen of the cocktail party, where they just have that polish and they have that ability to just connect and relate with anyone, because it seems like so much of their job is just based on relationships and connecting.
And trust.
And trust, yeah. And saying, like, you have a lot of money and I'm going to help you, or my team is going to help invest that to give you the biggest return on it. That's a tough job.
It is, yeah. And it's a tough kind of first 18 to 24 to 36 months. Either people make it or they don't. The good news is if you make it, it's an annuity. So while that capital is with your bank,
continuing to make money on it,
you continue to make money on that.
Yeah.
And so you can form a really nice life for yourself if you do that. And I would say the benefit of and I mentioned the word trust. And that was not by accident. The benefit of coming out of the military is, you know, you're able to talk to that guy who sold his trucking company in Monroe, Louisiana. You're able to also talk to, you know, the Googler, the ex-Facebook person.
Oh, yeah.
And really what it boils down to is, who do I trust with my money? And you should not lead with your business card if I work for Morgan Stanley or Credit Suisse. You should say, I'm an ex-officer in the United States military.
Oh, man.
And that's an immediate
credibility.
Way to build trust and credibility.
Yep.
Exactly. And then the last component of financial services, and then we'll talk more about banking, is alternatives. So hedge funds, private equity. And this is largely, you know what, let's just leave it at alternatives.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll probably touch upon private equity when we talk about what I'm doing now.
So we have just to be respectful of time, we've got about 10 minutes left. And so I'm wondering, I want to make the most of the time. So my thought is to kind of go into, because I really like the way that you're explaining the, you know, very complex field simply. So I'm tempted to go into kind of Bank of America and talk about investment banking and what that life was like. But I'm actually open to, if there's something you're itching to talk about besides that, that's further down, I'm happy to hop around here.
Sure. Yeah. So here's what I'd like to talk about.
Yeah.
Not Bank of America or not Evercore, which is the investment bank that I spent most of my M&A days working at. Let's talk about the field in general
and
why they are attracted to military candidates.
Yeah.
So again, as we said, it's providing capital and advice to corporations. So think when Verizon right now is buying Yahoo.
Yeah.
There are bankers that are advising Yahoo of what somebody should pay for Yahoo, and there are bankers that are advising Verizon on what they should pay for Yahoo.
Yep.
And then there's somebody financing that as well. And so what makes an ex-military candidate attractive to banking? And I'd say very clearly, if you and this is something that should be that you should take away with for your application process, as well as your interviewing process, not only in business school but also post business school when you're interviewing for jobs. Don't ever attempt to translate military speak into civilian speak. Mm. You as a submariner should certainly know this, that there's no way to say, hey, what I did on a day-to-day basis running a nuclear submarine is exactly applicable to what you do as on daily life as an investment banker. Rather, what you should examine is, what are the critical or salient characteristics and strengths that you're looking for in your job as an investment banker? And do my set of skills and attributes and characteristics line up? And I would say, unequivocally, as a military officer, regardless of whether you're a personnel officer, you're a ship commander, or you're a pilot, or you're a comm officer like me doing computer hacking work, what you need to do is think about those skills. And so very early and very quickly, I learned that as an investment banker, they liked attention to detail.
Yep.
Great communication skills, both oral and written, the ability to get to just get shit done. Oh, I'm not sure if I can say that on here, but
yeah, GSD, man, that's just, massive.
Just get shit done at all costs. And that is working around the clock where there's little margin for error. Having something that's very presentable, that's very professional, you just got it done. So when you think about those traits and characteristics, that's exactly what you did in the military.
Yeah.
You're operating at, if you're not doing shore duty or, you know, I was back not traveling, one of the 3 out of 4 weeks a month. You are operating in an environment where you're framing and solving ill-defined problems, where you're working around the clock, where attention to detail was absolutely critical for what you're doing, where your communication skills, both oral and written, were critical. In that way, I had kind of explained how these were the attributes that I embodied as a military officer and how they were perfectly aligned with what you're looking for as a banker. So
I love it because you're essentially spoon feeding for them. I understand what matters in the job that you do.
That's
and
right.
This is how it relates. And I'm imagining that, like, this is just through stories. You had refined a story that shows a particular attribute, and then how that would relate. Is that right?
That's exactly how I did it.
Yep.
So, as an example of attention to detail.
Yep.
As an example of, you know, excellence in all I do. You know, I had this award in the Air Force. Performers are going to always perform. Or as an example of maturity, this is how I demonstrate in the Air Force. And maturity is critical when you're standing in front of a corporate officer of a company and you're giving advice to them.
Yeah.
Here's an example of when I exhibited.
I remember one of the instructors I really liked at Stanford had said, our first year just kind of not reamed us out, but it said, like, you kids are not as good. She'd come from, I think, Kellogg, and just said, you guys aren't as good as the students at Kellogg in terms of, like, you aren't as hungry of really honing the story. And she said, look, the students I taught at Kellogg, they would be walking to class and they would say, like, tell me your story about meticulous attention to detail, and they would go and they would repeat it and they'd work on smoothing it out. And so by the end, by the time they were in an interview, they had told these little stories and these little vignettes hundreds of times. And so it was just a really good delivery and really efficient at saying this, portraying and painting the picture of that trait that was very valuable.
And being punchy and succinct.
Yep.
and having the audience understand it.
Yeah.
Absolutely critical.
So with the four minutes left, I'm wondering if someone's on active duty right now and they're thinking of going into investment banking, what advice would you have for them in terms of how they could best prepare for that now?
So I would say, almost universally, you're going to have to go through business school.
Yep.
And then think about what business schools are pumping out those sorts of grads into those sorts of career fields. And they're largely, this isn't a universal truth, but they're largely the finance-oriented schools.
Yeah.
So that's what you should be thinking about. Secondly, I would tell you, most military grads who go to these top business schools typically go into investment banking rather than exploring the other areas of finance that we talked about, mm-hmm. sales and trading, personal wealth management, and then the alternatives, hedge funds and private equity. They're all very lucrative. They're all fairly high stress. Banking, for one reason or another, is kind of a continuation of the thank you, sir, may I have another.
Yeah.
And for some reason, we're kind of gluttons for punishment
where
you know, in the military, it's, where do you want me to go? Korea, I'm going to another tour in Korea. Or, oh, you need me to deploy again to the desert? Great. Investment banking, it's fairly mindless, mundane, monotonous work a lot of the time, but you're working largely around the clock. It's again, thank you, sir, may I have another? There are other areas of finance that you should certainly explore other than just doing investment banking. M&A, I'm speaking of. Learn what those things are.
Yep.
And overwhelmingly, if you want to do anything finance oriented coming out of those schools. If you're a military candidate, you typically go into investment banking, and two or three years later, you're like, why'd I do that? Like, yeah. There are so many other ways to make money.
Yeah.
And that's just within finance. There's a whole host of other ways to be successful. I would also say be long-term greedy, not short-term greedy. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean there are a number of ways to make money and to utilize your strengths. And I'm talking about different industries and sectors and pursuits. Believe it or not, quality of life, the culture of your firm, the quality of your colleagues, all these are certainly things that should not be ignored. So while we did garner big signing bonuses, coming out of business school and joining banks, don't be so short-sighted.
Yeah.
Do your homework, understand what you're passionate about, you'll find something out there that perfectly fits what you're looking to do and employs your strengths and talents.
What about that? That's great. One question I always like to ask is, what has been the biggest surprise? What was the biggest surprise when you transitioned from military to civilian? What was the biggest adjustment or biggest thing you just didn't know was coming?
So this is very easy.
Yeah.
People are assholes.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is when you're at the academy, not only are you bound by the honor code, mm-hmm. But you're likely going to school with people who, even if that honor code wasn't explicitly in place, they would be living under the standard, holding themselves to a higher standard. I'm not sure exactly of the honor codes at the military academy or naval academy, but the first sentence in ours is, we will not lie, steal, or cheat, nor tolerate among us anyone who does. Like, explicitly prohibiting bad behaviors, I think everybody can get pretty acquainted with that and understand what that means. I think the toleration clause is a bit more difficult, particularly as, you're living in and amongst your peers and holding them.
Yep.
But further, the next sentence goes on to say, you're gonna hold yourself to a higher standard and live honorably. That becomes more of a, rather than denying yourself doing bad stuff, it's actually proactively pursuing doing good stuff.
Yep.
And what I recognized coming out of the military and transitioning to the corporate world is not everybody is like that. And so, going from Air Force Academy into the intelligence community, you then had polygraph tests to take. Again, people are very honorable and people's lives are at stake, right? Where the intelligence kind of gathering I'm thinking of the verb, and then ultimately the dissemination of intelligence, but people's lives are really at stake. And so people are compelled to do the right thing, not because somebody's looking over their neck, although somebody is looking over their shoulder, but just because it's the right thing to do.
Yep.
The gravity of the situation dictates it. But when I transitioned to the corporate world, like, people have sharp elbows. People don't do the right thing just because it's the right thing to do.
Mm.
People do the selfish and greedy or easy thing to do.
Yep.
And so there are a lot of assholes out there. And believe me when I say that the grass does appear to be greener.
Mm-hmm.
There are real intangibles when you're in the military. And believe me, it's really comforting to know that when you're in a briefing or a presentation in the military, when you don't have to question people about the numbers or about the impact or about their sources, you accept themselves at their word.
Yeah.
And that is not the case elsewhere.
Yeah.
And there's a real intangible value to be placed on that. So be careful.
Yeah.
One is, do never, never, never prematurely leave the military.
Yeah.
Because you assume it's going to be better elsewhere. It's different. Not necessarily better, but it's different. If you are, do your homework and go into it with your eyes wide open. And listen, this is really funny and not lost on my parents either. When I was in the military running around the world with my hair on fire, I'd call my parents and certainly not discuss anything classified, but they knew that I was running off to Qatar or Korea or Japan or the UK or, the American Southwest, doing U.S. intelligence community, doing crazy stuff in the desert. I had stories to tell. Like, it was interesting. When I went into banking, the calls dropped off precipitously to my parents. And my dad would say, like, what's wrong? You know, we know that you're working a lot, but I'm like, Dad, I've got nothing to report. Like, nothing's interesting. I'm moving numbers around a page. Like, they're paying me a lot of money for this, but I mean, the stories have dropped off.
Yeah.
It's not as fun. You know, bonus day is great, but there's 364 other days a year where, you know, you're kind of an office dick now. So be careful. Really understand what you want to do and why you want to do it, because you're going to have fun and you're going to learn a tremendous amount in the military. Don't prematurely cut that off.
Yeah, this is great. I feel like I'm just at the tip of the iceberg for getting into this, but I appreciate the way in which you lay out things and the candor with which you talk about the pros and cons on this. So thanks for your time on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Happy to help out with volume two or...
volume three, four, and five.
All right, that's all for today. We'll be back next week with more stories with veterans sharing their experience, advice, lessons learned, and challenges to active duty personnel. As always, if you have any feedback on how I can make this more usable, how I can provide active duty personnel with more ammo in navigating their career, drop me a note at beyondtheuniform.io, and have a great week.